Welcome to Antioch. We are a multi-generational, justice-minded church in beautiful Bend, Oregon, seeking and celebrating the reconciliation of all things. May the Word of God turn your heart toward Christ and the world He loves.
As we move from gathering to listening, our scripture reading today is from the book of Exodus, chapter 2, verses 1 to 10. Now a man of the tribe of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. When she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could not hide him any longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and coated it with tar and pitch. Then she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. Then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe, and her attendants were walking along the riverbank. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her female slave to get it. She opened it and saw the baby. He was crying, and she felt sorry for him. "This is one of the Hebrew babies," she said. Then his sister asked Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you?" "Yes, go," she answered. So the girl went and got the baby's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this baby and nurse him for me, and I will pay you." So the woman took the baby and nursed him. When the child grew older, she took him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses, saying, "I drew him out of the water." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.
Thank you, Gary. More church. Good to see you all today. Hope you had a great summer. We are studying the book of Exodus this summer, and we just started last Sunday, so if you missed last week's sermon, you may want to go pull it up on YouTube or on the podcast so you can get caught up. Just make sure you smash that like button and subscribe. Just kidding, we don't care about that, but we are in Exodus 2 this morning, and it's an amazing story. We're just going to walk through the story, but it's the story of how God launches his plan to rescue his people from slavery and ultimately to save the world. And the way that God carries out this plan is through the brilliant and courageous actions of five righteous women. And I know it's Father's Day, and there are actually a couple of dads mentioned in this text, but one of them doesn't do anything, and the other one represents Satan. So we're gonna just focus on the women in the story today. So before we get to chapter 2, we're gonna hit the last few verses of chapter 1 so we can kind of get the whole context. So the situation in Exodus is that there's this immigrant community of Israelites, also known as the Hebrews, and they're living in the land of Egypt. And for a while, the Egyptians didn't mind them there, and everything was fine, but now there's a new pharaoh in town. And pharaoh isn't his name, it's just a title. It means the king of Egypt. And so this new pharaoh is afraid that if the Israelites become too numerous, eventually they're going to revolt and take over Egypt. As I mentioned last week, I know it's hard to imagine, but there was actually a time when some people were really worried about too many immigrants coming into their country. So that's the situation. And so Pharaoh comes up with a plan, actually three plans, to try to stop Israel from getting any bigger and stronger. And so last week we saw plan A, which was to force the Israelites into slavery. So Exodus 1:14 says, "They made their lives bitter with harsh labor and brick and mortar and with all kinds of work in the fields. In all their harsh labor, the Egyptians worked them ruthlessly." And so Pharaoh made Israel's life in Egypt a living hell, treating them like animals and forcing them to do all kinds of backbreaking manual labor under the harsh Egyptian sun. But we're told that the more they were oppressed, the more the Israelites multiplied and the stronger they became. So then Pharaoh goes to plan B, which we find in verse 15. The king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, whose names were Shiprah and Puah, "When you are helping the Hebrew women during childbirth on the delivery stool, if you see that the baby is a boy, kill him. But if it's a girl, let her live." Okay, so here's where we meet the first two of our righteous women in today's story. They're midwives, whose job it is to help their fellow Hebrew women deliver their babies. And it's noteworthy that the author tells us their names, Shiprah and Puah, even though we're never told Pharaoh's name, which is interesting. But because of the role that these two women play in the story, the author records their names for all of history. And so Pharaoh has instructed these two Hebrew ladies that when they're delivering an Israelite baby, that if they see that it's a boy, then they're supposed to kind of make sure that the child doesn't survive delivery. So the infant mortality rate, of course, was already super high in the ancient world. And so the idea was that these midwives could kill these baby boys during birth and sort of make it look like an accident. But they're told if it's a baby girl, to let her live. Okay, so this is a little bit of a surprising twist when it comes to the way that they thought about gender in the ancient Near East. Because it actually wasn't that uncommon for unwanted babies to be killed. But usually it was done by just taking them out in the desert to be exposed. But it was almost always the baby girls who were unwanted. See, in a time of patriarchy, a time of manual combat, a time of hard labor, baby boys were much more desirable. Because the more men you had in your tribe, your family, your nation, the stronger you were. And that's exactly what Pharaoh is afraid of. He's trying to keep these Hebrew boys from ever being born because he doesn't want to grow them to grow up into men, become soldiers, and start a revolution. So he comes up with this plan to wipe out a whole generation of Hebrew men before they can even take their first breath. And he wants to use these Hebrew midwives to do it. That's his plan. But Shiprah and Puah have a plan of their own. Verse 17, "The midwives, however, feared God and did not do what the king of Egypt had told them to do. They let the boys live." And so instead of obeying Pharaoh's orders and killing the baby boys, these two hardcore Hebrew midwives stand up to the most powerful man in the world, and they refuse to do harm to the vulnerable lives they've been entrusted with. Why? We're told because they feared God, which means that what God had said carried infinitely more weight with these two women than what any man had said. These women are righteous before God, loyal to their people, and they do their work with integrity unto the Lord. But that doesn't mean that their civil disobedience doesn't have consequences. So after a while, Pharaoh keeps noticing all these little Hebrew boys running around and figures out that Shiprah and Puah aren't doing what he had told them to do. So in verse 18, "Then the king of Egypt summoned the midwives and asked them, 'Why have you done this? Why have you let the boys live?' And the midwives answered Pharaoh, 'Hebrew women are not like Egyptian women. They are vigorous and give birth before the midwives arrive.'" So here's what's so brilliant and subversive about how Shiprah and Puah handle Pharaoh. They tell him essentially, "Hey, we tried to do what you ask, Your Highness, but you know how barbaric and unpredictable these Hebrew women are. They're not sophisticated and suave like you Egyptians. They're like farm animals. They just push and these babies come out before we can even get there." But here's what they're doing. They're using Pharaoh's own prejudice and ignorance against him. And just like with the white enslavement of Africans in our own nation's history, the only way you can justify owning another human being is by convincing yourself that they're not fully human. And so these two midwives play into Pharaoh's racist, sexist stupidity that Hebrew women are more like animals than like people. And he buys it. He's like, oh yeah, that makes sense. So, enslaving the Israelites didn't work. Live aborting the baby boys didn't work. So now Pharaoh moves on to plan C in verse 22. Then Pharaoh gave this order to all his people. Every Hebrew boy that is born, you must throw into the Nile, but let every girl live. Okay, so since he couldn't keep them from being born, Pharaoh just comes out and basically makes it illegal to be a Hebrew boy in Egypt, and the punishment is death. He enacts a massive state-sponsored infanticide and murders a whole generation of baby boys by drowning them in the Nile River. So pretty deranged, right? But remember last week, as we saw, in Exodus, Pharaoh is a representation of the serpent in Genesis. He's not just a sketchy guy. He is the human embodiment of evil. He's actually the same thief that centuries later Jesus would say comes to steal, kill, and destroy all that is good. And so if we thought that, you know, getting Adam and Eve to eat the forbidden fruit wasn't that big of a deal, now we're starting to get the picture that the serpent king steals Israel's freedom, kills their babies, destroys their lives. So the author makes it really clear who the bad guy is in this story. Okay, so that's where chapter 1 ends, with the oppression, extermination, and attempted destruction of God's people under Pharaoh's rule. But story's not over yet. In fact, this is actually really where the Exodus journey first begins. And it starts with a baby. Exodus 2. Now, a man by the tribe of Levi married a Levite woman, and she became pregnant and gave birth to a son. And when she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him for 3 months. Okay, so here is where we meet our third righteous woman in the story. We aren't given her name right here, but in a few chapters, we'll find out that this Hebrew woman from the tribe of Levi is named Jochebed. Jochebed. And she gives birth to the baby boy who will be named Moses. Okay, and the author tells us that when she looked at her baby, she saw that he was a fine child. Now, she's not using the word fine the way we do. Like if you ask someone, hey, how was Sean's sermon last week? And they're like, it was fine. That's not what she means. The Hebrew word here is actually tov, which means good. And it's the same word that God uses 7 times in Genesis 1 when he looks upon his creation. Like in 1:31, God saw all that he made, and it was very good. It was tov. So Jochebed looked at her baby, and she saw that he was good. So notice, this is another sample from Genesis. If you weren't here last week, you missed some music education about 1990s hip-hop. And we listened to some Tupac and some Ice Cube and talked about how there's this technique that hip-hop artists use called sampling. And sampling is where you take a piece of a recording of an old song and you kind of splice it and remix it and weave it in to a new song. And I told you that that's kind of how the Bible was written as well. Inspired by the Spirit of God, the biblical authors are constantly sampling each other. They're constantly quoting or referring to other parts of Scripture within their writing. And so whenever we notice something in the Bible that sounds really similar to something else we've read in the Bible, we should pay close attention. And in this case, when Jochebed looks at her son and sees that he's good, we're being told something that I think has more to do with the kind of woman she is than the kind of baby Moses is. Jochebed is a woman who sees the world through God's eyes. She delights in her child the same way that God delights in his creation. So Moses may be a fine child, but his mother is a godly and righteous woman. But obviously then, the problem with this fine child, this good kid, is that if anyone finds him, they're going to kill him. And so Jochebed keeps him hidden for 3 months. I don't know if you've ever tried to hide a baby. It's pretty tough. And it works well for a little while, but then in verse 3, when she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and coated it with tar and pitch. Then she placed the child in it and put it among the reeds along the bank of the Nile. Okay, a couple things here. First, remember how I said that one of the dads in the story doesn't do anything? Well, that's Jochebed's husband. Okay. In a few chapters, we're gonna find out that his name is Amram. And we're told here in chapter 2, he marries Jochebed, and he gets her pregnant, and then we never hear from him again. Okay? Once Moses is born, he literally never does or says anything else for the rest of the Bible. So he's a pretty useless dad. And so you imagine this scene then, where they're at the Nile River and Amram and Jochebed bring their baby down to the water, desperate to save his life. And Jochebed is the one who's doing all the work, right? She builds this little boat and she's tucking the baby into it and she's hiding it in the reeds. And the whole time Amram is just goofing around, splashing and swimming in the river. And Jochebed goes, Amram, why aren't you helping me? And he goes, because I'm in denial. So it's Father's Day, as you know. If Sean gets 3 jokes, I get 1. They build this little boat. She puts her baby in it. She hides him in the reeds among the riverbank, hoping and praying that somehow he'll end up in the hands of the right person. And it's a horrible situation for a parent to be in. But even before we find out what happens next, the author here gives us a little hint of hope. It's easy to miss, but there's another sample from Genesis here. Do you remember another time in the Bible when someone was saved from water by building a boat? Yeah, the story of Noah's Ark in Genesis 6. And if you think I'm reading too much into this, the Hebrew word that's translated as basket in verse 3 is teba. And teba only shows up one other story in the Hebrew scriptures. Genesis 6, God said to Noah, so make yourself an ark, or teba, of cypress wood. Make rooms in it and coat it with pitch inside and out. So, in order to save her son from drowning in the water, Moses' mother builds an ark, coats it with pitch, and puts him in it. And the author is telling us that just that in this little boat lies God's plan to rescue his people and save the world. And just like he did for Noah and his family, God is going to bring Moses through the waters of death to bring about a new reality. Now, how's he going to do it? By sending an unlikely person to rescue this baby in the river. In verse 5, then Pharaoh's daughter went down to the Nile to bathe, and her attendants were walking along the riverbank. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her female slave to get it. So she opened it and saw the baby. He was crying, and she felt sorry for him. This is one of the Hebrew babies, she said. Okay, so of all the people who could have found this little Hebrew baby, it happens to be one of Pharaoh's daughters, an Egyptian princess. And this is our fourth righteous woman. Because rather than obeying her father's decree and killing the baby like she should have, we're told the baby was crying and she felt sorry for him. Here's something interesting. This is the only place in the biblical narrative where a baby is crying. Adults cry throughout the story, but in the Bible, babies don't cry, only here in Moses. Which, by the way, if you have a baby that cries, it doesn't mean there's probably nothing wrong with it, all right? It's just not a biblical baby, and that's okay. So I don't want you to freak out. But Pharaoh's daughter hears this crying baby, and the author tells us she felt sorry for him, or in other words, she had compassion on him. So Pharaoh's daughter is a compassionate woman, meaning she shares in the suffering of others, which is exactly what the biblical writers tell us about what God is like. Later in Exodus 34, we're famously told, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness. The Lord is a compassionate God. He shares in the sufferings of his creation. Which is why, in the very next chapter, Exodus 3, we're told that God hears the cries of his people. Exodus 3:7, the Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So notice this. In Exodus 3, God says that he has heard his people crying out in Egypt. But so far, the only one to cry in this story has been baby Moses. And who is it that hears his cry and has compassion on him? Pharaoh's daughter. This Egyptian princess is an image of God. God's answer to the cry of his people comes in the form of a compassionate woman caring for a vulnerable child. So, to all you parents with little kids at home, whether they're biblical babies or not, I know it doesn't always feel like it, but when you tend to the tears of your children, you're doing the Lord's work. It's a big deal. And so Pharaoh's daughter finds baby Moses. She realizes that he's a Hebrew. But she doesn't want anyone else to find out about this baby, because if they do, they're going to kill him, right? And so she needs to figure out a way to keep this baby safe. And that's when we remember that back in verse 4, we found out that Jochebed actually had another kid. She had a daughter before Moses. And when Moses was taken down to the river, we're told in verse 4, his sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. Okay, so baby Moses had a big sister. And we find out later in the story that her name is Miriam. And most scholars think that she was maybe about 6 years old when Moses was born. And she's our fifth righteous woman. In the words of Bill Shakespeare, though she be but little, she is fierce. So when Pharaoh's daughter finds Moses floating in the river and is trying to figure out what to do with him, little Miriam, who's been watching from a distance, has this brilliant idea. And she comes running up to the Egyptian princess in verse 7. Then his sister asks Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you?" "Yes, go," she answered. So the girl went and got the baby's mother. So Miriam realizes that Pharaoh's daughter needs someone she can trust to take care of this baby. So Miriam offers to go and find some Hebrew woman to do it for her. And the princess thinks it's a great idea. So Miriam goes and finds her mom and says, "Mom, guess what? An Egyptian princess found Moses and she wants to talk to you." So Jochebed goes down to the river in verse 9. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this baby and nurse him for me, and I will pay you." So the woman took the baby and nursed him. So great. So maybe, I don't know, a few hours ago, Jochebed had hidden Moses in the reeds, hoping and praying that somehow God would provide someone to take care of him. And it turns out that she was God's answer to her prayers. And it's a pretty sweet situation, too. Not only does she get to nurse and raise her own child, but she's going to get paid to do it, which probably sounds pretty good to all the moms in the room. And who's the one that came up with this whole plan and pulled it all together? Miriam. She was the mastermind who brokered this whole arrangement. And so now little Miriam and her baby brother and her righteous mom and her stupid dad all get to live together as one happy family. What a story. Finally, verse 10 says, when the child grew older, she took him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses, saying, I drew him out of the water. So once Moses has been weaned and is old enough probably to start going to school, maybe 4 or 5, he is officially adopted by the princess, which makes him Pharaoh's grandson. And he moves into the royal palace, and Pharaoh's daughter gives him the name Moses, which means to pull or to draw out, since she drew him out of the water. But she has no idea that one day this little boy will grow up to be the one who draws God's people out of Egypt. And that's the beautiful irony of the story of the 5 righteous women. Because Pharaoh was obsessed with killing all the Hebrew boys because he was afraid of the Hebrew men. But it was actually the Hebrew women that he should have been afraid of. They're women of integrity who fear God and do what is right. They're women of wisdom who see the world through God's eyes. They're women of compassion who share in the suffering of others. And they're women of courage who trust God even when no one else does. See, these women who Pharaoh considered weak end up being the powerful instruments of God's salvation. And this is the way that God works in the world, isn't it? From the very beginning of the story all the way through the end, we see a God who loves making his power known through what the world considers weak. That's what God does. If we fast forward a few thousand years, an angel visits another righteous woman, a girl by the name of Mary. And he tells her that she's going to give birth to a son, and his name will be Jesus, and he's going to save his people from their sins. Mary responds to the angel's message by singing a song to the Lord. It's known as the Magnificat. In Luke 1, she sings, "He, the Lord, has brought down rulers from their thrones, but has lifted up the humble." That's what God does. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, the Apostle Paul writes, "But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong." That's what God does. See, in Exodus 2, the water where so many children had died is the same water where Moses' life was saved. And the very thing that had been a place of death, God redeems into a place of life. And we know that we also are saved by death. Because God ultimately chose Christ and the cross, the place that looked like God's defeat, as the very place for his abundant life to triumph. That's what God does. Amen.